Well, if you'll turn in your Bibles to the book of Habakkuk, that's where we're going to be for our study this morning. Several things running through my head as we prepare for this study. Things that I want to say at the beginning, ways I want to introduce this, or just a few of those ideas in my head. But one of which is trying to figure out in my head how I take what I do as a sermon and turn it into a Bible class. We've got a common theme this week. We've been looking at foundations of faith, and Habakkuk is an excellent example of faith in Almighty God. What I hope that we can do during our time in our study this morning is to look at this short book, this Old Testament minor prophet, as it's often called, and see what we can see about that. I would like to have some interaction. Jonathan had told me, y'all can blame it on him if you want to, he told me that I was free to ask anybody any question at any point in time. I don't know if I'm going to go that far, but I certainly will, from time to time, leave it open to your observations and your thoughts. I'll go ahead and tell this story. Before I started full-time preaching, I was talking with the older preacher that I would be working with. Why he asked me this question, I have no idea. But sitting down to eat with him, and he's just kind of getting to know me. Probably some of you have had similar situations when you sit down to eat with Clay. He'll ask you a question or two kind of thing. And the older preacher just asked me, he said, so what's the book of Habakkuk about? It's a minor prophet. Can't recall right off the top of my head. And that was all he asked, and we went on. And that's kind of stuck with me. I'm not suggesting that this morning I know exactly what the book of Habakkuk is about, but I have a little better idea than what I did 20 plus years ago. This may be one of those books that if somebody had asked you, what's the book of Habakkuk about? What's the book of Malachi about? You know, these minor prophets, we don't often talk a lot about them, but there's some wonderful lessons in them. And Habakkuk especially has some great ties to the New Testament, and I hope that we can see some of those things as we go through the book. I'd be curious to know if there's anyone, and I'm not trying to put anyone on the spot, certainly trying to pose myself as somebody that knows all the ins and outs of Habakkuk, but What do you know, if anything, about Habakkuk himself? Oftentimes when we go through these books and we look at Matthew, we look at the book, the Gospel of Luke, and we can remind ourselves of who Luke was. Luke was a physician. Luke was not an apostle. And those background ideas can help us out with some things. So anybody have a guess about who Habakkuk was or what we may know about him from other places in the scriptures? Have you ever heard Habakkuk mentioned anywhere else within the Old Testament even? Ready? Yes? No? Do you remember?
He's a prophet.
He's a prophet. That's it. That's all. That's about all we know. We know his name, and that's it. Mark?
Probably conjecture, but thought he might have been from the tribe of Levi and able to conduct some of even the singing. This was set to be able to be sung.
Yeah, so when you look at chapter 3 is very much like a song. There's even in the first Shiganoth, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, in chapter 3, that is similar to some psalms that we've seen, that's in the book of Psalms. Psalm 7, I think it is, also mentions that word. So there's, as Mark said, a conjecture, a thought, a possibility. There are others that have some other ideas about who Habakkuk is and what his makeup is. I think there are some that say from the tribe of Judah, possibly. But all of this is just supposition. It's just questions, thoughts, and ideas. One thing I found out very recently is that there's some commentary on the book of Habakkuk within the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found back in 1947. And so they have the text of the first couple of chapters, first what we call chapters of the book of Habakkuk with some commentary that was possibly written in the early, before 100 AD, in the early part of the church's history. Anyway, so what about the time frame? It had been mentioned last week or last night about going through and reading the book of Habakkuk. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of who's done that or anything, but just in your own history, in your own knowledge of the Bible, does anybody have a thought or an idea about what the time frame would look like for the book of Habakkuk? When did Habakkuk live?
So being what we call a minor prophet, there's an oracle, a judgment written against a nation. So Habakkuk, as I've read through it, would be written against partially Judah and partially Babylon, the Chaldeans. So before the Babylonian Chaldeans would have come to Jerusalem, which would have been about 600, I'll use a rough date, around 600 B.C.
Right, 600 B.C., because what happened in 586 B.C.? Jerusalem is taken by the Chaldeans. Jerusalem is taken by the Babylonians. Now, we have mentioned in this letter that of that nation of the Chaldeans that is going to be raised up. God has a plan for them that we see that's going to be talked about. And so if we take that general time frame before the destruction of Jerusalem, some have put it during the time when the princes and such, like Daniel, had been taken away in captivity, kind of in that middle time frame. Well, if we know that, if we have that good estimation, then there are some things that we can know about the time frame of which Habakkuk lived. As we go through this, let me give you a few little facts. Much of the book is really a conversation between the prophet and God. The prophet Habakkuk is asking some questions. He's talking with God, and then God gives him an answer. And so we see that. Elsewhere, I ran across a quote that said, "Whereas elsewhere Jehovah speaks to the prophet, here the prophet speaks to Jehovah." Habakkuk has even been described as a philosopher. And the reason that he is described that way is because, unlike the other prophets, he's not concerned so much with delivering a message, but he would be one of Clay's favorite people. He's trying to solve a problem. So what's the problem that Habakkuk sees? Let's go through just a few things that we can learn about the days of Habakkuk. I've asked you to turn to Habakkuk, but let's go back a little bit and see some things that we can know about the time frame in which Habakkuk would have lived. Turn over to 2 Chronicles chapter 36. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. We are familiar that the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, these are the chronicles, these are the history, these are the events recorded for the kings of Israel during the United Kingdom and then during the divided kingdom when there is both Israel and Judah. In 2 Chronicles chapter 36, if someone would read verse 14 through 20 for me, please. 2 Chronicles 36, and somebody start reading in verse 14. Reagan, would you read that? Start at verse 14 and read through verse 20.
"Furthermore, all the officials of the priests and the people were very unfaithful, following all the abominations of the nations, and they defiled the house of the Lord which he had sanctified in Jerusalem. The Lord, the God of their fathers, sent word to them again and again by his messengers, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they continually mocked the messengers of God, despised his words and scoffed at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, until there was no remedy. Therefore he brought up against them the king of the Chaldeans, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, and had no compassion on young man or virgin, old man or infirm. He gave them all into his hand. All the articles of the house of God, great and small, and the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king and of his officers, he brought them all to Babylon. Then they burned the house of God and broke down the wall of Jerusalem and burned all its fortified buildings with fire and destroyed all its valuable articles. Those who had escaped from the sword he carried away to Babylon, and they were servants to him and to his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia.
All right, so just knowing this time frame and thinking about just being able to kind of recite the books of the Old Testament, and we start with Genesis and work our way through to 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. If we're at the last part of 2nd Chronicles, and we're reading this description about what is happening to messengers from God, the prophets and such, if we know it's that time frame, well, we can do some very quick, easy thoughts about what time frame it's not. So if we understand it's at the end of 2 Chronicles, did Habakkuk live during the time when Moses was around? No. You may think this is strange. Why are we talking about Moses? But there were some glory days in Moses' day. Moses worked a lot of miracles that the children of Israel saw. They saw the power of God as they crossed the Red Sea. Well, Habakkuk's not during that time frame when the children of Israel were acting that way. What about during the days of Joshua? What took place during Joshua's time? What was the major event going on when Joshua was leading the Israelites?
Conquering Canaan.
Taking the land of Canaan. What are some major events that we can know and we can see about what happened during Joshua's day? The fall of the city of Jericho, marching around the city those days. The conquest, when God gave them the land. But we're not talking about that time frame. Well, we can continue on a little bit. And what about during the days of the kings? Who are the kings in the United Kingdom? There are three of them. Say it again?
Saul, David, and Solomon.
But we're not talking about that time frame. We're at the end of 2 Chronicles. We're long after that. We're not talking about during the glory days when Solomon is building up and the nation of Israel is broadening its borders and such. So whether we're looking at the miracle-filled days of Moses, the glory days of Joshua, the golden age of David and Solomon, that's not when Habakkuk was around. Habakkuk lived in a very dark and turbulent, declining days of Judah. Israel had already been taken away into Assyrian captivity. That was half of the nation of Israel gone. Only left is Judah, and this is an important period of time when Habakkuk lives, that they had turned their back on God, and God is coming in with a judgment against them. So like we said, a little bit before 600 BC, and very likely Habakkuk lived to see all of these things happening. Well, when we understand that Habakkuk lived in that period of time, when most of the Jews had lost their real faith in God, and the nation is filled with injustice, the nation is filled with violence, think again about what's happening there in 2 Chronicles 36. He brought them against the king of Chaldeans, who killed their young men with a sword in the house of their sanctuary. These outsiders are coming in and had no compassion on young man or virgin, on the aged or on the weak. Going back to verse 16 and see what the people of God, they mock the messengers of God. This is not a happy time. Despised their words, scoffed at his prophets. Wait a second, I thought the prophets were guys that were supposed to come and tell a message from God. Absolutely they were. But this is the nation of Israel during the time of Habakkuk. Well, let's go and look at some of the words of Habakkuk, because we get a sense of that in Habakkuk chapter 1. Habakkuk chapter 1. Jared, can you read Habakkuk 1, 2 through 4 for us, please? Can you do that for us?
Yes, sir. How long, O Lord, must I call for help? But you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save. Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife, and conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralyzed, and the justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous, so that justice is perverted.
All right, now I realize that's, maybe not poetic, but that's some very flattery, some very flowery type words. We might not say things exactly that way today, but I'm curious. When we read through that, can you envision things happening in our lives the same way today? Why do you show me iniquity? How many of us have ever seen wrongdoing? We see it in our politicians. We see it in our co-workers. We see it at times in our family. And Habakkuk is questioning. He's asking God, how long shall I cry out? Wait. Habakkuk's praying to God. Habakkuk has been talking to God and asking about these things, and you will not hear. So it seems to Habakkuk that he's asking God these things, and God's just not answering. That's what it seems. And we pray for our nation. God, please heal our nation. God, help our leaders, whether city or state or national, help our leaders to turn to you, and we don't see it happen. And we get to that point where we can be very much like Habakkuk. I would dare say we live in a generation much like the time in which Habakkuk lived. There's another problem that Habakkuk faced while he was living, and that he seemed that God didn't care. God seemed to have a contrary plan. And see there in verse 2 through 4 of chapter 1, God seems to be ignoring the injustice, the sin, and all of this time that Habakkuk's living in, he's seeing these things, and what God did all seemed wrong. God's not doing anything about it, kind of thing. But when God told him what he was going to do about the sin, Habakkuk's going, I'm not sure that's going to work. I don't quite understand that. Let's continue on. In Habakkuk chapter 1. Clay, would you read verses 5 and 6 for us, please?
Look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days. You would not believe if you were told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that fierce, impetuous people who march throughout the earth to seize dwelling places which are not theirs.
Mark, would you... 12 and 13 for us, please.
New King James, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O Rock, you have marked them for correction. 13?
Yes, sir.
You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he?
All right, so verses 2 through 4, Habakkuk's got a question. We're living in some troublesome times. We've got a lot of things going on. The children of Israel are steep in idolatry. They have turned their back on God. They are worshiping idols left and right. And Habakkuk's asking God, I'm crying, when are you going to help with this? When are you going to do something about this? And God says, hey, I'm going to do something about it. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, and I'm going to bring them in. Okay, so God has now answered Habakkuk. But Habakkuk knows who the Chaldeans are. Now, the Chaldeans, they were a wonderful nation of God-fearing Gentiles, right? Babylonians were not. The Babylonians were a horrible nation. And so Habakkuk's, his faith in God is being challenged by the surrounding moral corruption, but also with the incomprehension over God's reaction to it. Yeah, that's what we see in verse 12 and 13. Here's the question that Habakkuk raises. God says, I'm bringing in the Chaldeans. Verse 9, they all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, and for they heap up earthen mounds and seize it. Then his mind changes, and he transgresses. He commits offense, ascribing this power to his God. These are, and God is lowercase, these are ungodly people. These are barbarians. They're going to come in, they're going to see a city, they're going to take their shovels and axes and things and start heaping up the dirt. They're going to put that siege mount up, they're going to walk up the walls, they're going to come into the city, they're going to burn it all off, they're going to take care of it, they're going to do whatever they want, and then they're all going to say, that's our God that's doing that, and their God being themselves. So that in verse 12, are you not from everlasting, O Lord? It's almost... In my mind, I can hear Habakkuk going, wait a second, God. Don't you know everything? Don't you know who these people are? You have appointed them for judgment, but you've marked them for correction. They're worse than we are. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. God, I know who you are. I know your traits. You don't like sin. You don't like evil. So why use evil to come in and punish your people? That's the question that Habakkuk is raising. What is remarkable about this is that in spite of all of Habakkuk's faith, in spite of everything that's happening around Habakkuk, his faith became so strong and so deep that he's able to make one of the most inspiring declarations of trust anywhere within the scriptures. Chapter 3 of Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 3, beginning at verse 16. So, as we look through the book of Habakkuk itself, I'll give you a little bit of an outline if you want to think about it this way. Verses 1 through 11, notice we started there in verse 12 of kind of God's view, God and the what has been described, the sin of the enemy, the Chaldeans. Starting in chapter 12, 1 in verse 12, running through, all the way through chapter 2 in verse 20 is God and his the sin of the enemy, talking about the Chaldeans, the very first part of chapter 1. Being God and the sin of the Israelites, the people of God. But then beginning in chapter 3, you can divide chapter 3 up a couple of different ways, but one way is to look at verses 1 through 15 of God's judgment and God's salvation. So we are reminded as Habakkuk is giving this prayer, this psalm almost, if you will, in chapter 3, O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden. Before him went pestilence, a fever followed at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills bowed. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, the curtains of the land of Midian tremble. O Lord, you were despised with the rivers. Was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the sea? That you rode on your horses, your chariots of salvation? Your bow was made quite ready. Oaths were sworn over your arrows, Selah. You divided the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered his voice and lifted its hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of your arrows they went. At the shining of your glittering spear, you marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation with your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare the foundation to neck, Selah. You thrust through with your own arrows the head of his villages. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. You walked through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters. So this is God's judgment. This is what God's salvation is being presented by the prophet Habakkuk in these very poetic type words. But here, starting in verse 16, The prophet who began to cry out of doubt and perplexity, he ends up his message with a shout of triumph, a shout of faith. And here is the phrase that if you don't remember anything else, perhaps if someone asks you what the book of Habakkuk is about, you can remember this phrase. Habakkuk is about a prophet who goes from a sob to a song. He's crying out before God. He's questioning things, curious about why this is happening and what's God going to do about it. And ends with this song. Man whose faith was challenged by the surrounding sin. Man whose faith was challenged by the perplexity and the frightening glimpse into the future. Not only overcame those challenges, but rose to such heights of trust in God that he's still an example to us 2,600 years later. Habakkuk 1, chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. When I heard, my body trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. Now, these are words that we might not utter, but I think we understand what he's talking about. The fig tree may not blossom. What do we expect to get from fig trees? What do we expect to get from fig trees? Figs. We want figs. And if the fig tree is not blossoming, this is where my daughter and all, if it doesn't have a blossom up there, you're not getting the fruit. So we're talking about these things. If we're planting tomato plants and they're not blossoming, you got some tomato plants back there, Allison? If you don't see those little yellow flowers on the tomato plants, you're not getting any tomatoes. Labor of the olive may fail. Now, we're not out working the olive groves, but we go to work. And when the laborers are not producing, the fields yield no food. We got all those combines out there that are supposed to be reaping in the corn harvest, or all the cotton pickers out there, and they're sitting there rusting because there's nothing out there to pick. Think about that and how that would affect our lives. When the pulp mill has no pulp coming in because there is no pine trees anywhere. That's what Habakkuk is describing. There'd be no herd in the stalls. We don't have meat. We don't have food. We don't have the things that we need to sustain our lives, really. But what does he say in verse 18? Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet. He will make me walk on my high hills. Regardless of the problems that take place within our lives, we can have a faith like Habakkuk. We can have that unshakable faith. Just like with Habakkuk, we're living in an evil generation, and we constantly face temptation to become like many around us. But like Habakkuk, he resisted the pressure to conform to the generation. It's possible for us to maintain our faith in a godly world. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. What does 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13 tell us? What does it remind us?
Tempted above that which they are able or will with the temptation, make a way of escape, and you may also be able to bear it.
Do you think Habakkuk was tempted to turn away, to throw his hands up and say, I don't understand? Absolutely. But Paul reminds us when he writes that letter to the Corinthian church, There's no temptation such as not common to man. We're all facing the same thing. Whether we live in the dark ages in Israel, whether we live in the dark ages in Europe, whether we live in dark times today, no matter when we live, temptation is always there. But Paul reminds us that God is always there. No matter the temptation, God's going to provide a way of escape. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2 says, "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." No matter the world in which we live in, God says, don't be conformed to it. You stick with me and I will take care of you. I think there are times when we can be very much like Habakkuk. We don't understand. Why is God, who has control over all nations, why is he allowing leaders of nations to rise to power? Why do we have guys like Adolf Hitler, Saddam Hussein?
Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, thank you. Vladimir Putin. Those guys in Russia. Why do we have Fidel Castro? Why do we have, and we can just keep going on, listing names. Why are these things taking place? I think there are things that we can think about that we often question and are curious about. We don't have to go to the foreign nations and try to figure this out. We try to figure out, why are people who are living faithfully before God, why are they suffering? Why are innocent children dying? Why are some prayers not granted? We request that these things take place. You may be familiar with the song, Tempted and Tried. Farther along, I think, is the way it's titled in some song books. Tempted and tried, we're oft made to wonder why it should be thus all the day long. While there are others living around us, never molested, though in the wrong. When death has come and taken our loved ones, it leaves our home so lonely and drear. Then do we wonder why others prosper, living so wickedly year after year. Farther along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, we'll understand why. And see, these questions arise in our minds. And even though we may not always understand why God allows things to happen, I hope that we can realize that we, like Habakkuk, can hold on to our faith and have an unshakable faith, regardless of what confronts us. Really, it's possible to develop the kind of faith that can keep us faithful to God no matter what happens around us. We lose everything. If we get to the point that we see there in verse 17, and we don't think that we have food, we don't think we have clothing, we don't think we have the necessities of life, God is still there. And we can develop the kind of faith through knowledge and prayer and meditation and association with Him to have that unshakable faith. Now, I mentioned earlier on that the book of Habakkuk, being a minor prophet, is one that we probably don't think a whole lot about. We don't study, we don't refer to it as much as we do some of the other books of the Old Testament and the stories of Daniel and Joshua and Moses and guys like that. But there's a famous statement in the book of Habakkuk that teaches the possibility of having this type of faith that we're talking about. And it declares God's attitude toward all that have that faith. That is found in Habakkuk chapter 2. In verse 4. Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 4. Behold the proud. The soul is not upright in him. But the just shall live by faith. Now, that may be a familiar phrase to you. You probably have heard that one from time to time. And there's good reason for that. It's because we see that in the New Testament. We go to the book of Romans in Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and 17. Probably one of those passages of scripture that Bible students have learned over the years may be able to quote at least 16, but I dare say that if you've quoted 16, you probably are able to just continue that thought and quote verse 17 as well. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. For in it, that is in the gospel of Jesus Christ, in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. Now, what we see here is that salvation, the righteousness. If you're familiar with the book of Romans, you know that the Apostle Paul, he says this up front. The just shall live by faith. And then he continues on and gives all of these arguments and this thesis, this doctrinal statement kind of thing, of where he proves that with arguments after argument after argument, talking about the faith of Abraham and what took place and how Abraham was justified by his faith because he was obedient to God. The just, God justifies. God provides salvation. We also see this phrase in Galatians chapter 3. Now, the book of Galatians is a little different than the book of Romans. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 10 and 11, for as many as are of the works of the law are under the curse, for it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. Now, in verse 12, he says, yet the law is not faith, but the man who does them shall live by them. So what's Paul telling the churches of Galatia? He's using that same phrase that Habakkuk has showed us to say, hey, we're not living by the law of Moses. We're not justified by the law of Moses. All those sacrifices that those individuals did, those things they, remember in Hebrews, and we'll get to Hebrews in just a second. Remember the book of Hebrews that we talked about earlier, that the blood of bulls and goats could not take away sin? That was the law of Moses. The law of Moses could not take away sin. It was imperfect. Now, it did exactly what God wanted to do. And it was complete in that sense. But it couldn't take away sins. And so a better, perfect law came. And that's what the Apostle Paul is arguing for in the book of Galatians. Showing that the law of Moses, that's over and done with. That's taken away. The just shall live by faith, not by the law of Moses. That's the contrast that he makes there. Then also, that phrase is, the just shall live by faith, is found in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10. I'm going to start in verse 35. Kind of wrapping up a thought there in chapter 10. He says, therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. Think about Habakkuk and what he saw and how Habakkuk is an excellent example of not casting away his confidence in God. For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. Verse 37, for yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Now the just shall live by faith, but if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. The just shall live by faith. Those individuals who have faith in God, have a faith like Habakkuk, they don't draw back to perdition. They're not shying away from God. They're going to endure. They're going to continue. Not casting away their confidence. They have the endurance, knowing that God is faithful who has promised. Notice that Habakkuk is not just saying that just people walk by faith. But he's saying that people with real faith will live. The book of Romans describes that faithful life as salvation and righteousness. And the letter to the Galatian churches, it describes that life through faith as being justified by faith in Jesus Christ, not by the law of Moses. And the book of Hebrews, it describes that faithful life as that life through faith as receiving the salvation instead of condemnation, not perdition. That's a good thing. Receiving eternal salvation. So as you think about those promises, realize that they're not talking about a dead faith that ignores God, but a living faith that is obedient to God. Obedient to God even when we don't understand what's happening. Even when we are not sure about some things. In the Old Testament, people with real faith kept obeying God's law even when they didn't understand everything about it. Wait a second, God, you're going to tell me that you're going to take the evil nation of the Babylonians, you're going to bring them in as a judgment against the sins of your own people? God says, yep, that's what I'm going to do. And Habakkuk says, great. I'm okay with that because I have faith in you. Is that the kind of faith that you have? That's the kind of faith that is available. And I appreciate very much your attention. Thoughts or questions about it before? We've got just a minute or two before Reagan's going to get up again and go knock on the door. Any other thoughts or observations, questions that you might have about the book of Habakkuk? If you let these 2 minutes go by, then Habakkuk's done. We're on to something else.
So how did the children of Israel get here? You had Hezekiah and then who brought them back, and then you had 54 years of Manasseh where he set up idols in the temple, and Josiah, they found the law in the temple, and they were saddened. And so even though you had the good years of Josiah, where was the rest of the nation and what had happened? And God's fullness is just kind of, then that last 100 years, he's ready to destroy his people.
And yeah.
I think the hard thing, just as Habakkuk, is why aren't you using this evil nation? We're not as bad as they are. But they totally left God for their own selves.
Yeah, and they, like us, ended up doing that to themselves. Even though, and your example of the good kings that come along, very much like the judges and the cycle that the children of Israel went through of, judge comes along, they follow God for a little while, that judge is gone, they drop back off, and it's just this almost seemingly never-ending cycle of following God and then falling away, following God and falling away. And with each one of those judgments coming, and judgment came upon the children of Israel during the days of the judges. Judgment came upon the children of Israel during the days of the kings. And it's just God's plan to work these things out and to cause these people to realize, and so that by the time after the Babylonian captivity, when the remnant comes back, no more idolatry. Now, that was not to say they were perfect, but no more idolatry. They didn't worship idols after their captivity like they did prior to the captivity. And so we are able to look back in hindsight and see some of the marvelous actions of God that helps us understand, well, I might not be able to understand what's going on in the nation around me, but I want to have a faith like Habakkuk. I appreciate very much your kind attention this morning. Thank you so much.